What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Well, hello. It's a new Defocus Media podcast. I'm Jennifer Lyerly, and I'm here with Daryl Glover.
Hello, Jen. How are you doing today?
I'm trying my best to stay sane. Hopefully you are, too.
Jen, you know I am. You know, actually, I had help today from one of our colleagues, Dr. Danielle Richardson. I did yoga for the first time. Well, not my first time, but in a long time. And it actually relaxed me. Like, my body feels better. Mentally, I feel better. And then after that, I walked around the neighborhood. So I'm actually feeling okay.
Well, I'm happy for you because I'm actually feeling rather stressed. And part of it is because I know the topic we're about to talk about.
Oh, yes.
Nothing stresses me more than thinking about my money. I'm one of those people that, like, I like my money where I can see it and I hold on to it in my hands. And it's like terrible for financial planning and everything because I don't like investing it. I don't like gambling with it. I just want to hold it. But we're here with an expert guest that maybe can break me of my terrible ways.
Friends and family, we'd like to welcome Dr. Aaron Newfield. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Well, as you can tell, I'm feeling great. Jen, not so great. But hey, you're going to make us happy today, right? You got some good information for us, we hope.
I'm going to try my best.
Well, for those that don't know you, if you could just give us a little bit of a background of who you are, where you went to school, how'd you get into optometry? Just break it down for us, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So I'm Aaron Newfield. I'm originally from Fremont, California. I went to SCO in Memphis, Tennessee for optometry school, so moved out there. And then I graduated in 2015, decided I wanted to come back to California. So I bought a private practice in 2016 in Los Altos, California, and kind of laid my roots down there. We're a multi-doctor practice, primary care office that also focuses on medical optometry, specialty contact lenses, and boutique optical. And in addition, Los Altos is also the home to my other two business ventures, number one being Odies on Finance, which is a web-based finance company that focuses on optometry, which I co-founded with my good friend, Dat Bowie. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. And secondly, Theia Eye Care, which is a tech startup that I started with a few local engineers. We're just aiming at revolutionizing optometry pretesting through virtual reality.
Whoa, that's impressive. Well, why don't, because we are going to spend a lot of time talking about ODs on Finance because it is a huge service that you're doing for our profession. But tell us a little bit more about this startup because that's fascinating.
Yeah. We're basically using virtual reality devices, recruited a few software engineers. We're trying to put a lot of the pretesting in those devices, including visual fields is obviously the biggest one because you can use a remote and you're inside of you're immersed in a device, but also different pretests such as stereo and color vision and even visual acuity. We're hoping to launch a product hopefully shortly after the coronavirus crisis. We're hoping to launch beforehand, but then this whole thing happened and kind of, threw a wrench in everything. So that's the plan for right now.
Well, definitely once we have something more to talk about with the firm product, we'd love to get you back on and learn more about this because that's extremely exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
So, we really want to dive deep into your website, your resource, ODs on Finance. I came across your website, I don't know how long ago, but I saw it, actually your Facebook page, I should say. And let me tell you, I was amazed because there was a lot of great content, a lot of great dialogue. People are bringing great questions, and you just seem like you're just a great resource. It seems like you're well-versed in finances for someone that graduated in, 2015 and have already paid off, $150,000 of their loans, student debt. I mean, that's pretty impressive, man. Not many people could do that or say that they've done that. How did you develop your love for finance, and why did you actually develop ODs on Finance?
Yeah. Funny thing is, when I got out of school, I used to never think about finances. I grew up with two parents that were in accounting, and I just thought that was the most boring thing ever. So I just never wanted to think about money. But one day, it just hit me. I think it was probably a couple weeks out of school when I got one of my first jobs. I was bouncing around a little bit with fill-ins, like most new grads do. And I was working with this optometrist that was 80 years old, and he was still working. He was hobbling around, just didn't really look like he was enjoying himself. And I was talking with him. I asked him, "Hey, why are you still working? No offense, but you're 80. And he was just telling me, "Hey, I lived in the moment my whole life, never cared about my finances, never saved, always traveled, always did this other stuff. And that's why I'm still here." And that kind of really just lit a fire under me. I'm like, hey, I really need to take control of my finances. If I keep living this, you know, day-to-day life where I'm not caring, I might end up like this, and that's not something I want to do. So basically, I took control of the finances, promised myself to take care of my student loans in 2 years. So that involved a plan. So the plan was to work 7 days a week. I did that for close to a year. It nearly drove me crazy, but I'm kind of a goal-oriented person, so that I just really stuck with that. And just saved close to 90% of my income and just threw it into loans and investing. And that passion, I met Dr. Dat Bowie a little while later. Once again, just we were kind of bouncing around with just various fill-in jobs. And he also had that same kind of passion, had a similar experience where he kind of just had that fire lit under him too when he heard stories of people that just didn't save. And so that's when we formed. And then we said, hey, why don't we create a Facebook group where optometrists can just talk about finance? So we did. We kind of took the ODs on Facebook name and just, you know, changed it a little bit, called it Odies on Finance, and kind of how the whole thing started.
Well, I want to pick your brain a little bit because you were very aggressive about paying your loans off. Would you recommend to someone just coming out of school faced with a lot of financial debt, is paying off loans priority number one, or is there something else that they should be doing with their money?
You know, what we advocate for is definitely paying off the loans. There's a variety of ways you can approach your loans. You can refi, and then there's certain loan forgiveness programs. There's different things you can do depending on what trajectory you take with your career. But the important thing is that student loan debt isn't good debt to have. And for the most part, when you come out of school, it's high interest. So you just want to knock out as much of it as possible. And it also is guaranteed in the sense that, sure, you could take that money that you were to pay for your student loans and invest it in something, but that you don't know what your return is going to be. You know, with your loan, it's going to be that 6% or 7% or whatever interest that is. So our advice for most young ODs just getting out into the workforce is definitely try to pay off as much as you can, as quickly as you can. Look into refi options, but also have a certain amount set towards investing. You want to start saving for retirement early, because one of the biggest factors with retirement savings, with investing, is to start early. Time is the biggest factor for basically having that exponential growth when you start investing.
Another thing you mentioned earlier that I found fascinating was that first year, at least, you were saving 90% of your income to pay towards loans. Do you have advice for people on, after they do get maybe a couple of years out of school, maybe they're close to paying off their loans or fully paid off, what's a comfortable goal to set for how much you're saving versus how much you're spending?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, the ideal answer, the ODs on finance answer, is around 75% of your income you want to save. Obviously, that's a little crazy for a lot of people. And if you have family obligations, that plays a big factor. Obviously, if you have a mortgage or just all these different expenses that you kind of have to do, that factors into it. But honestly, just try to save as much as you can. Try to write down a realistic goal for yourself and then create a budget off of that. That's what we recommend. That's one of the big things that we kind of started the group with, is create a budget. Whether you think you have control of your money in your mind or not, just write down a budget and try to follow that every year. And there's a lot of good resources online, a lot of good applications that link to your bank accounts, link to your investment accounts. And it can kind of tell you whether you're tracking that budget or not. But for most, if you can, obviously that 70, 75% range is awesome. But even scaling it down to 30 to 40%, that's still pretty good. Considering an average OD salary, if you're investing that money, you're going to be well prepared for retirement, you know, in your late 50s, early 60s.
With the markets as they are right now, obviously we're in the middle of a worldwide crisis. If people have the monetary availability, do you feel like this is a good time to invest, or what are some of your personal takes on this?
Yeah, you know, this is a really interesting time. So obviously we had the huge down, we're basically in the bear market right now. We had that huge downturn just a few weeks ago. So, you know, the common consensus is that, hey, stocks are really cheap. And that's true in the sense, if you were to compare those stocks to 2 months ago when we were at record highs for the Dow and the S&P 500, yeah, they're definitely lower, but also consider we're in a period of heavy volatility right now. Most of America is out of the workforce. You know, our economy is kind of halted to a complete stop. So that's something to consider too. We're going to see a lot of fluctuations. So timing the market is really tough, probably impossible for most individuals. So what I would recommend at this point, if you're wanting to get into investing, just do something called dollar cost averaging. And that's where you just average your investments out. So every 1 week or 2 weeks or whatever increment you want to do, just put a certain amount amount of money into an investment. That way you kind of mitigate your risk. So you're not, you know, lump something everything into one investment and all of a sudden you see some market fluctuation and that all goes down. Or it could go up, but once again, high risk there. So yeah, I recommend just kind of dollar cost averaging your way in.
Yeah, you see, that's the technique that I use. I love that. I think that approach is safer simply because you're getting it on the way down and then also getting it on the way up. So you're making money.
Exactly.
I personally also like to do long-term investing. So I'm a big guy for looking for stocks that may have dividends. What are your, what's your take in regards to, you know, certain stocks or stocks with dividends or ETFs and things of that nature? I mean, you know, this whole stock market finances is kind of foreign to a lot of optometrists. So let's just spend a little time on just the stock market in general.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, what I recommend for the majority of optometrists that don't really care about, you know, doing excessive research on stocks or ETFs or anything like that, just find a good S&P 500 index fund and just dollar cost average into that. That's the simplest thing to do. S&P 500, it has a pretty good return, and they've done a lot of studies where they found that even professional investors can't beat the S&P 500 average. So for about 90% of those of doctors out there, that's what I would recommend. That's just the simplest route. You don't have headaches. You're not worrying about different things. If you want to jump into stocks, jump into ETFs or anything like that, that's perfectly fine. My biggest thing is just doing your research. So whatever company or whatever group of companies you choose to invest in, yeah, just look at everything about the company. Make sure it's a company you believe in and something that you invest in. Obviously, you've got growth and in dividends. So yeah, Daryl just mentioned dividend stocks, which are great because every couple of weeks or couple of months, you're getting that little payment towards your stock and you can either collect that money or you can just reinvest it into the stock. Growth is good if you're on a long-term trajectory. If you're, you know, in your late 20s, early 30s, just starting to invest. Investing in a good tech stock that is going to have some growth is a great idea because you've got a long ways to go. So even if there is some volatility, some fluctuation downward or upward, it doesn't really matter because you're in it for the long haul. But if you're nearing, if you're kind of nearing that retirement age, that's when you move more towards dividends, more towards bonds. You kind of allocate that portfolio so it's a little bit more on the safe side and a little less volatile.
Gotcha. And recently, I've seen a lot of chatter about 401ks. I mean, what advice do you have for folks that have a 401k with the market tanking? What advice would you give to our colleagues out there?
Well, first thing, I would say right now, and especially the last 2 weeks, just don't look at your 401k because that is just going to, yeah, that's just going to cause you a headache. That's going to cause you stress. But if you have a 401k, just max it out. That's what we always recommend. That money, you've got the tax advantage going for you. A lot of people don't even get the option of a 401k, and especially if you've got some sort of employer match, definitely take advantage of that every year. That's going to be a fantastic way to save up for retirement.
Now, do you believe in maxing out, of course, yes, the full 100%, but some companies, once they hit a certain mark, they do 50%. Would you still do that 50%, or would you take that money and invest it into the market because the return may be greater?
You know, that's a good question. It depends on what kind of plans your 401k has. If you're just going to invest it into the market into a similar plan, then I would say just keep it in the 401k. But if you're looking to go into, you know, an individual stock that isn't allowed on that plan, then I would say in that case, if that's something that you really want to do, then go ahead after you've maxed out the 100% 401k.
One thing you mentioned at the top of the show, Dr. Newfield, was that you are a private practice owner in California. I know many people, when they're kind of first couple of years, especially out of school, looking at the difference in, well, I can make this guaranteed money working elsewhere versus spending my money, maybe even taking out loans and going into debt again to buy a practice. Does that make financial sense for me? And obviously you had made the decision to buy a practice. So can you walk us through how you came about that decision as your best financial option?
Yeah, definitely. Well, first of all, the job market in the Bay Area is a little bit different than the rest of the country. I'm sure you guys have heard it's very saturated here. So I remember moving back in 2015 and just finding a solid employed job was a challenge at that time. So I was just kind of bouncing around a little bit. And really, the difference between being employed and owning a practice, in my opinion, just comes down to how much you're willing to invest in yourself. Because when you buy a practice, you're essentially investing in yourself. You're betting on yourself that you're gonna make this practice work, that you're gonna run it efficiently, and that it's gonna be a great investment. That's essentially what you're doing. So I always tell people to just kind of have a good look inside and see, is this what you want to do? Is this something that you want to pursue? Or are you comfortable just working, seeing patients, or do you want something more? Do you want to be in control of your destiny? Either way is perfectly fine, in my opinion, but really just answering that question is the big part of whether or not you want to invest that money into opening your own practice. For me, it came down to, it was a great location, great circumstances surrounding buying the practice. So that's why I went into it. That's why I did it. And it was always a goal of mine ever since I started optometry school to own a practice. So for me, it made sense.
So Aaron, you're a business owner. You own a practice. You know, there's been a lot of discussion all across Facebook, LinkedIn, the news, all outlets about furloughs versus layoffs. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this a little bit more in detail. And what did you actually do in your office?
Yeah, so right now in our office, what we're currently doing is we're running a skeleton crew. I kept everyone employed, and that was something that was important to me. I just like having that trust and just that relationship with my employees. I didn't want to just leave them out in the dust. Obviously, unemployment is pretty good at this point because the government's offering basically additional stimulus money. So I think it's $600 or $650 on top of what standard unemployment is. But I really just wanted to keep everyone employed so that they could keep living their lives, especially in the Bay Area. It's pretty expensive to live out here, so I didn't want to just put people on the streets. So at this point, everyone's still working. We're still running the practice. Obviously, it's a lot leaner than it and a lot less patients than before, but that's what we're currently doing.
And how long do you think you'll be able to sustain this? I mean, I've heard some similar minds like yours where folks are like, yeah, I want to keep my team members on full time. I want to have that commitment to them. I want them to trust me. And when I get out of this, I want to be able to rock and roll and see all my patients. But, you know, some folks have big payrolls. I mean, is this something that you feel like you'll be able to sustain over X amount of months? And if you do, I mean, what's the secret? I mean, is it truly just saving a lot of money, or are you investing some of the money that you have in your practice to make more money for you? What's the game plan?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. With us, we're fortunate in that we're small enough where I can keep everyone on. And one of the big things we talk about on Odies on Finance is having an emergency fund. That's on a personal level, but then a practice level, you know, we call it cash reserves. But yeah, we always wanted to have about 2 to 3 months of cash reserves. Never thought I would ever have to use them. Like, it was always just something I kind of looked at in the rearview mirror. And then I'm like, hey, I've been out like, what, 4 or 5 years, and here I am using the cash reserves. So
you got to practice what you preach, man. You live exactly that life, man.
Yeah. So yeah, we're running off the cash reserves right now. But yeah, I can understand for larger. I've got some colleagues here that, you know, work in practices where they have 30 employees, and they've just had to furlough everyone because there's just no way you can have cash reserves available for that many people for this long of a time period. And luckily, and I think we'll get to this a little bit later, the government has got some great programs regarding payroll and getting people back on payroll. So
let's jump into it right now. Let's break it down. The the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP. Let's talk about it, if you don't mind breaking it down from top to bottom.
Yeah.
A lot of people are confused about this. And I know they just changed something. I was just watching CNN maybe like 20 minutes before we got on this podcast, and it seems like they're enhancing the program and talking about they're going to get the checks out or deposits within 2 weeks. So, I mean, the game is changing every single second.
Yeah. The game, that is very true. Cause yeah, we had a live event on it. Was it 2 days ago? And so much has changed since then already. So, but yeah, basically Paycheck Protection Program, it was part of the CARES Act, and that stands for the Coronavirus Aid, Relief and Economic Security Act. And basically that came off of a $2 trillion stimulus package that Trump signed into effect. You know, basically the government realized everything's shut down, you know, we're considered non-essential, but since the government shut us down, they got to give us some sort of relief. And so first part of the CARES Act is the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP, or P cubed, or whatever you want to call it. And yeah, essentially, it's providing a forgivable loan program to cover the cost of retaining your employees at full capacity and wages. And that is eligible to any business that has 500 employees or less. And there's a few stipulations. I won't go into too many of the details because that you can just look that up online. But essentially, what you're looking at is 2.5 times your average monthly payroll. And it should cover you for about 8 weeks. That's what the government's saying. And everyone's looking at the application right now. Odies on Finance, people are just posting like every 10 minutes asking if anyone's gotten through. Essentially, you need to use a bank that is approved for SBA 7(a) loans. And there's a sample application that they put online. And yeah, we're just waiting for more details for submission and all that.
Yeah, I think it goes live tomorrow from what I heard.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I've heard that some banks are participating and others still aren't sure what's going on. That's the word I've been getting from a variety of colleagues, depending on what bank you use. So
yeah,
I would say if you're looking for Triple P, definitely just keep calling your bank. I mean, I'm sure they're very busy with everyone trying to apply for this, but yeah, definitely just keep checking in and try to be one of the first to the table, because I believe this bill, it is a finite amount of money, so you definitely want to be early as opposed to late.
Yeah, they definitely said that it was capped, but they did also stress during the news conference I watched earlier that if they need more money, they will put it in the economy. So it seems like they know that the economy sucks right now.
Oh, yeah.
They're really going to do something about it, and they're really going to shoot that money out fairly quickly. So, I mean, that's comforting, especially for small business owners, because the last thing you want is to build up this amazing practice and it goes under simply because of something that's out of your control.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, small business is the backbone of America. They always say that. And it's so true, because what happened, it's not just optometry. You know, you think of restaurants, you think of mom and pop stores, dentists, everything has been shut down. So all these small businesses get affected.
Well, Aaron, I know details are still being worked out as we speak as far as these programs go, but many small practice owners did lay off their employees. And my understanding of it with this CARES Act, the incentive was you have to keep your employees. So do you feel like there might be groups of optometry practices out there scrambling to rehire in order to take advantage of some of these benefits?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, once you look into the details of Triple P, you'll see that you do need to have employees on staff. But the good thing is you can bring them on in that 8-week period that's defined. You know, you can set that date, so you can try to rehire employees and base it off of that. So there's a variety of different details that go into that. Definitely read up on that and all that entails in that. But yeah, I know a lot of people have been furloughed and they're like, hey, we need to bring everyone back so we can get PPP. But it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is I've even heard some colleagues mention that, you know, the unemployment check that they're going to get is going to be more than they would get if they were working for the company. So some people are just going to stay out of work and collect that check and ride the wave.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that too from a bunch of colleagues, yeah, especially with that additional amount that they added to unemployment. And I've gotten word that people that have applied for unemployment, I think Monday or Tuesday this week, have already gotten it. So government is working quickly with unemployment.
Yeah, I heard if you're already in the system, then it's going to be an easy process because they already have all your information in your direct deposit. So it's nothing. So I've heard that as well. But I didn't know anyone got their I didn't know that someone's already received their money. I mean, that's phenomenal, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been rather quick. So, which is a good thing, especially in a crisis like this. So,
let's talk a little bit more about, you know, where the money has to go if you actually take this money from the government with the Paycheck Protection Program.
Yeah. So payroll costs obviously is the number one, as well. And factored into the payroll costs is also the healthcare costs that you have for your employees. Also any retirement plan contributions, that all gets put into it. Utilities, so electricity, gas, water, your telephone, your internet bill, you know, anything that's just kind of an overhead cost that's always going to be there, that applies as well. And once again, your rent. And then if you're mortgaging your business, most individuals that own their building are going to have it in a separate LLC, but ones that are paying their mortgage through their practice, the interest is something, but not the principal is what I've heard. And things that aren't eligible, obviously, they do have a $100,000 a year cap for employees. So looking at your associate optometrist, when you're factoring in, just remember that everything's going to be capped at $100,000 a year. So divide that by 12, that gives you your monthly payment on the payroll for those individuals. And also keep in mind, if any of your employees are receiving some sick leave pay from FML, or FFCRA, that's something to consider as well. That's not eligible.
I wanted to circle back on something that you touched on. You were saying that the mortgage should be a separate LLC. Why is that?
You know, that's the most common method. That's what I do, and that's pretty much every colleague I know that owns their business. They basically put that in a separate LLC, and the idea is that you then rent to your practice, so whether it be in an S-corp or LLC or whatever you have for that entity. Essentially, one business rents to the other, and that helps for a variety of tax reasons. And it also protects you, because if your building is in a separate LLC, if something were to happen, if, you know, there's some sort of lawsuit or anything like that, at least the practice and the building are separated. So the lawsuit can't go after everything all at once. It's kind of limited. So, which is kind of the power of the LLC. Yeah.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah. So definitely it's a legal thing that works in favor of the owner.
Now, what's the deal with this other option that's out there that I keep seeing float around, economic injury disaster loan? I've seen people talk about that as well.
Yeah. So that one actually is pretty interesting. So the EIDL, it basically is providing you emergency cash, and it's basically a cash advance, and there's no obligation to pay it back. And so that's up to $10,000. And there is an easy way to apply for it. It's on the SBA website. And yeah, essentially, it's just a grant from the government. Now, keep in mind, if you do get the EIDL, I know pretty much everyone's applied for it at this point. It's a simple application, takes like 5 minutes. They promised it in 3 days, but obviously that hasn't happened because everyone applied on Monday and no one's seen it yet. But I do believe that $10,000 will go against the amount that you get for PPP in terms of forgivable loan. So just keep that in mind. So say you get $50,000 in PPP. And you get the $10,000 in EIDL, you got to subtract that $10,000 in terms of what can be forgivable for the PPP. But the good thing is, if you do take out any additional amount with the PPP that's not forgiven, I believe the interest rate's only 0.5%, and there's no early payment penalties, so which is great. I mean, there's no loans like that out there currently. So.
Gotcha.
Practice owners that are listening to this show, it sounds like what they need to be doing right now, if they haven't already, apply for that EIDL to get the $10,000. Get everything, your ducks in a row, by trying to find a bank locally that's handling the SBA loans so that you can participate in the PPP for mm-hmm. your employees. And then what else should doctors be doing to prepare to hopefully restart patient care, whether it's months from now or, God forbid, any longer? But is there anything financially you'd recommend in preparation for things to restart?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and before I jump into that, just one other thing is there is also an SBA debt relief program that's available. And so far, the government is saying that if you have an SBA loan, whether you got it for your practice or your building or anything like that, that they are covering all your loan payments as long as it's a 7A for the next 6 months. And that includes principal, interest, and fees. So just one more thing to alert people to. It's actually a really big deal, but it gets overlooked because of the other ones. So just want to put that out there. And then, yeah, for things to get your practice started, definitely what I've been doing and what I've talked to a few colleagues about, talk to your vendors about holding bills that are due. I believe Odie's on Facebook has a good list of vendors that are, you know, being nice and pushing due dates back. So definitely look at that. Also, if you can defer any equipment leases and financing payments, that's going to help you build up some cash flow. And another thing is, if you probably have the time at this point, look at some invoices and start auditing invoices from, you know, frame vendors, contact lens vendors. A lot of times there can be mistakes or there can be credits that you've had for frames that you returned that never got applied to your account. So just go line by line and see if there's anything that's missing, because that can be some good cash flow for you in a situation where there's not much cash available. And just a few other things that you can do for your practice. Definitely telehealth has become a big topic. Patients still have emergency eye care issues, and a lot of them don't want to leave the house, especially if they're at, you know, that at-risk demographic where they have some comorbidities or they're at a certain age. So telehealth is something to adopt. It's something that, you know, Medicare has relaxed their requirements on in terms of HIPAA and all of that. So look into that, and then also try to continue that cash flow. So if you can have curbside ordering and pickups for either frames or contacts, or if you can do deliveries, that's just another way to, you know, at least generate some revenue for your practice so you're not completely inundated with this whole economic shutdown.
Well, Aaron, we greatly appreciate having you on the show. I mean, you really hit everything on the head. I mean, I don't even know what to say. I'm speechless because, like, when I was reading through all this stuff online and also looking at news outlets, you know, it could be a little overwhelming. And it's like, mm-hmm. what does this really mean? What does that mean? But I greatly appreciate the clarity that you provided for us today. If anybody's interested in learning more about ODs on finance or just, you know, advice in general, what's the best way for them to reach out to you or contact you?
Yeah. So our website is odsonfinance.com. We've got a ton of resources on there, so definitely jump on that. And also, the Facebook group is where it all started. So just go on Facebook, type in ODs on finance, and you'll be able to find the group. And there's a couple questions if you want to join. Basically, we only let in optometrists or students. So we want to keep it pure in that sense. So just answer those questions and we'll be happy to have you, happy to have you join the conversation. And I just got to send a special thanks to my co-founder, Dr. Datbui. He does a lot of work on ODs on finance. I cannot take full credit for ODs on finance. A lot of it is his. So I just want to give him full credit. And recently, Dr. Julie Pham, we added her to our team. She's been fantastic. She wrote a couple of great articles on the CARES Act. So I just want to give them props for that. And I want to give you guys props, too. I started listening to your show a few months back, and it's been fantastic. So,
oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You know, shout out back at you. I've been reading your website very avidly as this news is breaking, and the articles are very thorough. They're very readable. And if you guys aren't active members of this community, I highly, highly recommend, because you filter through a lot of the noise, a lot of the confusion, and just get to the point articles explaining what we need to know. So thank you so much for you and your team on the hard work you're putting in.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.